Welcome to Hogtails, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
Boys and ghouls, freaks and geeks, welcome back to another episode of Hauntheads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, Janine Mercer. I'm usually joined here by Mimi Steven, but she's decided to go on a little trip with her mom to Nashville this week, so you just get me, which I think it'll be fine. I think we'll get along just great. So, there is really no news that I have to report this week other than we've gotten some really good reviews on the most recent episode regarding Grant Park in Milwaukee. We really appreciate all the feedback from you guys, all the emails. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to let us know that we're doing a good job. We really appreciate it. So let's see here. Without further ado and without any crosstalk, I guess let's get on with the show. So the first story that I have for you guys this week is about the Grace Hospital in St. John's, Newfoundland. I've kind of been going back to my roots a little bit recently to try to suss out some of the paranormal activity and some of the claims on the island that I used to call home. I now call Milwaukee, Wisconsin home, but you know how it is. You never forget where you come from, right? So this week, Grace Hospital, St. John's, Newfoundland, they've actually shut it down. It's no longer a functioning hospital. But there are some reports of paranormal activity there, and some of them are pretty compelling. So I wanted to make sure that you guys had the opportunity to hear the stories that go along with that space, because, you know, maybe you guys wouldn't hear it otherwise, you know, in the U.S., in Europe. I know that we have a couple of listeners in India and Pakistan. So hi, guys. So yeah, here's the story that I have on the Grace Hospital. I was born there, at the Grace Hospital in St. John's, Newfoundland. There's a photo of me, a port wine stain on my right cheek, swathed in a fluffy baby blanket with satin trim and a glazed look in my eyes, in one of the many featureless maternity wards that the Grace had to offer. There's more to my story, not too much more that I want to divulge here, but the hospital and the residence building on the property have a story all their own, as old buildings often do. The Grace was Newfoundland's first maternity hospital, opened in September of 1923 by the Salvation Army. It was built specifically to cater to unwed mothers and had only 22 beds, but quickly expanded to 100 beds and added a children's ward by 1929. It was also chosen as the location for the second nursing school in the province. Mary Southcott, she was born in 1862, died in 1943, having created the first nursing school between 1903 and 1914, was charged with starting one at the Grace Hospital. Now, if the name sounds familiar, she's actually quite famous and plays a large role in nursing history in Newfoundland. So if you feel so inclined, please take some time to look her up, because she was a pretty cool person. She had been in the employ of the St. John's General Hospital, but had resigned from her position as superintendent of nursing after conflicts arose regarding her methods. She set up her own hospital and promoted midwifery in the province, also serving on the Newfoundland Midwifery Board. She was also the president of the Child Welfare Association and an advocate for women's suffrage. Now, several extensions were added to the Grace in later years. It expanded again in 1954 to 200 beds, and the government updated the existing nursing hospital 10 years later. A nursing residence was also added. The expansion of the Health Sciences Center in St. John's prompted the closure of the Grace in 2000. It was believed that the building was outdated and that it would cost far more to bring the structure up to current standards than it would to outfit the HSC. So they just decided to close it. Now, I have a little bit of a news story here from the Department of Transportation and Works, dated November 17th, 2006, titled Government Plans to Demolish Former Grace Hospital Building. And I'll just kind of read that quickly for you guys. The Honorable John Hickey, Minister of Transportation and Works, announced today that the government will issue a tender next week for the demolition of the remaining hospital building at the former Grace Hospital site on La Marchant Road in St. John's. If that building, constructed in the 1960s, is demolished, only the nurses' residence would remain on the site. The decision to issue a tender for the building's demolition was made following an unsuccessful call for expressions of interest to sell the facility issued in July. Government had determined that none of the responses were acceptable. However, Minister Hickey says a window of opportunity remains for those respondents. Hickey said, quote, "We've advised the respondents that we are open to offers until we award a contract for the demolition of the remainder of the former Grace Hospital. We expect that this would give the respondents 4 to 6 weeks to revise their submissions." In 2005, Transportation and Works contracted for the environmental remediation and demolition of a portion of the structures on the site. As a result, the houses at 205 Pleasant Street and 203 Pleasant Street, the smokestack, the 1920s section of the hospital, and the majority of the 1950s edition of the former Grace Hospital were demolished. So at present, the only structure remaining of the old hospital is the nurse's residence. The hospital itself, the smokestack, which was rather, it was an iconic part of the landscape in St. John's for many, many, many years. The residences at 203 and 205 Pleasant Street, those expansions from the 1920s and the 1950s, and all of the outbuildings had been demolished by 2008. Now, there's something about abandoned spaces. It's as if at any moment, something terrifying could slither its way around a corner or through a dark opening. These are the things we think about as we sit perched in front of our computers scrolling through what has recently been dubbed our rune porn. The Grace had added a children's ward and was accepting regular patients, not just unwed mothers, by the time it closed its doors. My grandfather, having fallen from a garage roof onto a pocket full of nails, yes, it is as painful as it sounds, spent a chunk of time here after surgery and rehabilitation. I remember clearly visiting the cafeteria with its pink walls and twisty chairs and weaving my way down the long hall from my grandfather's room to the vending area. I also recall Mr. Coffee and Mr. Canoe, two men who were very likely dead by now, who shared a room with my grandfather and offered me Werther's originals that had probably been kicking around in the drawer that they materialized out of long before either man had resided in those beds. But they meant well. It wasn't long after the Grace was slated to be torn down that curious individuals began investigating what remained. Although much of the equipment had been moved to the HSC, including light fixtures and old desks, random medical paraphernalia and some furniture were abandoned within. Many of the remaining articles were removed and taken off property by those looking to make a quick buck, while other items still remain a ghostly reminder of the building's past. Now, if you would like to see some photos of the Grace Hospital prior to demolition, you can look those up on hauntheads.wordpress.com. I actually found some excellent, excellent photos by a guy named Colin Peddle. His website is colinpeddle.com. And if you search on his site, you will come across the photos of the Grace Hospital from 2007. And they are really, really well done. They really will satisfy your need for ruin porn if you're so inclined to check those out. Now, the old nursing residence seems to be a hub of activity. Individuals who live close to the building or have sight lines to the property report ghostly apparitions, strange lights, and strange noises in the night. One such individual, a nursing student on break from his classes at university, had gone home to visit his parents during a break. His bedroom has a clear view to the old Grace Hospital parking lot. The student reported waking to a strange howling sound sometime around 4 a.m. He made his way to the window and instantly noticed somebody walking around in the lot. Now, he might have mistaken this person for a living being, if not for the fact that this person appeared to have no legs. They simply stopped at the hips, the remaining anatomy fading away into nothing. The figure would stop every few minutes, look to the sky, and let out a mournful wail. After about 15 minutes, the figure slowly made its way around the building and disappeared out of sight. A member of the demolition crew had a similar experience. While inside the residence, he kept catching glimpses of someone peeking around doorframes in his periphery. After a few minutes of this, the man walked to the doorway where he'd last seen what appeared to be a little boy. He peeked into the room but saw nothing there. The room was empty of furniture and he saw no child inside, so he went back to work. Shortly thereafter, the crewman again saw the boy. This time, as the boy disappeared through a doorway, he noticed that the boy appeared to be floating. The crewman was unable to make out distinguishing features, but he did notice that the boy appeared to be wearing a hospital gown. As a nurse was leaving the hospital in the wintertime, heading across the residence lot to her car, she noticed a woman walking toward the back of the building. It appeared as if she wasn't wearing any winter clothing, and it was very cold. The nurse watched as the woman disappeared around the corner. She didn't look like any nurse on staff that she knew and wondered if a patient was out wandering. The nurse followed the woman around the corner, but the woman had disappeared. When she looked down, there were footprints in the snow leading toward and stopping in front of a solid brick wall. So, are there spirits trapped on the grounds of the old Grace General Hospital? Will they ever find peace? Perhaps the energy surrounding the property has created a sort of portal to the other side, allowing the spirits of those lost while the hospital was still in operation to roam endlessly without release. So, I'm curious to know what you guys think about the Grace Hospital and what you think about the eyewitness accounts. As is the case with many an eyewitness account, there are no names. It's just a guy saw this or a nurse saw that. So, yeah, I mean, it's really up to you, you know, how much you decide to take to heart and how much you're going to take with a grain of salt. So the second piece that I have for you this week is Twin Strangers. And it involves doppelgangers. Now, a doppelganger is basically an apparition of a person that exists at either the same time and place as another person or in a completely different time and place as that person. I would imagine that there are people out there that have had the experience of being quote-unquote recognized by people. It's happened to me several times in the past. I'm walking around in a shopping center or a grocery store, and someone will tap me on the shoulder. And when I turn around, I see a complete stranger staring at me quizzically. And they say something like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were insert name here." It's definitely weird. I'm always curious who it is I look like to them. They explain that my nose is similar and the set of my eyes. They might say I walk the same way or look like whomever they're looking for from the side. Some people have told me that I'm the spitting image of their aunt, cousin, niece, neighbor. Sometimes people tell me that they met me in France or England, two places I've never been. I'm originally from Newfoundland, and I might look similarly to someone from England or Ireland. I also have French ancestors. I think we've all had a similar experience, right? Being mistaken for someone else. But when two people appear in the same place at the same time, it can be very confusing and also quite creepy. The term doppelganger is German for double walker. And the double of a person is considered to be a paranormal duplicate of a real person. On occasion, one can see his or her own double, but for the most part, the individual is unaware of the presence of a doppelganger. A double walker may appear in the same place as an individual, or it could appear in a completely different city, town, or country. In the 19th century, Emily Sagui, 32, worked as a schoolteacher at several girls' institutions in Dijon, France. By all accounts, she was an amazing and engaging teacher, and her students loved her. However, despite her popularity with the young ones, Sagui was dismissed from roughly 18 schools and could hardly hold a job for any length of time due to the strange occurrences that followed her wherever she went. In 16 years, she changed positions 19 times. In 1845, 13 students actually witnessed Sagui's doppelganger mysteriously appear next to her. She stood in the front of the room, her students sitting before her in rapt attention, and all of a sudden, a form appeared beside her. It appeared to mimic her movements, and although the figure was in close proximity to Sagui, she never acknowledged his presence. This was likely a good thing, because old folklore tales warn of the dangers of seeing one's own copy, or double walker. The copy appeared several times, each appearance seemingly making Sagui herself groggy and disoriented, including once while she ate. The copy ate too, presenting the same movements and mannerisms. On one occasion, Sagui was in the garden outside the classroom while her doppelganger sat in a chair in the front of the classroom. Although Sagui reported worrying that the students wouldn't do their work without her supervision, she never looked in on them. Instead, it seems as if she projected an image of herself into the space. The account reads as follows. Witnessed by nearly 50 persons, the students were intently working in their sewing class while another teacher sat in the front of the room reading a book. Outside the window, the students could see Emily working in the garden. The supervising teacher stood up and left the room. Seconds later, Emily walked in and sat down in an empty chair. Students thought nothing of it until one gasped and pointed out the window where Emily was still working diligently in the garden. Two of the students stood and approached the doppelganger and, being quite brave, reached out and touched it. They said that it looked just like Emily Sagui in all aspects, except when they ran their hands through the entity. They said that it felt empty, like the stuff cobwebs are made of. Later, Emily Sagui had told school officials that she indeed had been outside picking flowers in the garden. She had not seen the doppelganger. In fact, Emily never once saw her twin, but had in fact wished to herself that she was in the classroom supervising the sewing class. School officials noted in their documentation that each time the doppelganger appeared to them, the real Emily appeared lethargic and listless. A few people attempted to approach and touch the copy, but they found that although the figure was textural like heavy fabric, they were unable to place their hands upon it. Instead, their hands slipped right through it, making it more of an apparition. Day after day, the copy would appear and more children would be removed from the school by their parents. One would imagine that it's quite stressful to have a ghost-like figure drifting about while in the confines of a classroom. Eventually, Sagui was dismissed from the position. However, this tale is not unique in and of itself. Many others have had similar experiences, and some of them were even famous. Catherine the Great, Empress of Russia in the 18th century, retired to bed one evening when servants explained to her that they had already seen her enter the throne room. When Catherine went to investigate, she came upon an exact copy of herself sitting on her throne. She ordered her sentries to fire at the apparition, but to no effect. Catherine herself died shortly thereafter. Shortly before Percy Bysshe Shelley, a very adept poet, drowned in a sailing accident in 1812, he told his wife Mary, you might know of her, she wrote a little novel called Frankenstein, he had seen his doppelganger several times. At one point, he'd even met his copy on a terrace. The apparition had asked him, how long do you mean to be content? before disappearing. Percy's doppelganger was also witnessed by his friend Jane Williams, who stated that she would often see Percy walking past her window towards a dead end. He would only walk towards the dead end and never return back the way he'd come. The real Percy was nowhere near at the time of these incidents. Queen Elizabeth I of England, her reign was from 1558 to 1603, was known by those close to her to be a very savvy and level-headed individual, and she was certainly not the type to be concerned with the paranormal. That is, until she saw her doppelganger lying motionless on her bed. The spectral Elizabeth appeared to be laid out as if in funerary presentation. Such appearances are often precursors to the death of an individual, and in Elizabeth's case, this was no exception to that rule. One day, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, famous writer and politician from 1749 to 1832, was riding along a footpath towards home, having just left the residence of a love interest named Frederica. Goethe claimed that he saw a rider in the distance riding towards him. As the figure came closer, he realized that the rider was himself, although wearing different clothing. When the figure was close enough to touch, it disappeared. About 8 years later, Goethe was again riding the same path in the opposite direction when he realized that he was wearing the same clothes that the figure had been wearing 8 years prior. In another instance, Goethe saw his friend Frederick walking down the street wearing Goethe's own dressing gown. Goethe went home, and when he arrived, found that Friedrich had changed into one of his dressing gowns while drying his wet clothes. Friedrich claimed to have been inside and never wandered in the street. While mystics believe that double walkers are supernatural in nature, those with a more scientific lean are inclined to believe that seeing yourself in this way can more reasonably be attributed to schizophrenia or a glitch in the brain. At present, there are websites where you can find your own doppelganger. One such site, twinstrangers.net, a company based in Ireland, claims that two headshots and a quick search on their site will hook you up with a carbon copy of yourself. Just for fun, I signed up. I have yet to get confirmation in order to access the site, but it'll be interesting if I happen to stumble upon another me on the other side of the world somewhere. So, what do we make of this phenomena? Have you ever met your double? I suppose not, because if you did, you'd likely be dead. All right, guys, well, that's it for me this week. Thank you so much for listening. Mimi and myself greatly appreciate the time that you spend every week sitting in rapt attention in front of your computers and listening to your iPhones and whatnot. So I will be back next week. I am assuming that Mimi will be back as long as she doesn't get lost on the way to or from Nashville. So until next time, take care, guys. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, stay spooky. Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. For more Hauntheads, check out our blog at WordPress. You can find it at hauntheads.wordpress.com. We'd also like to thank you for your iTunes reviews, because your reviews will help us improve, and we value them greatly. You can find our podcast on Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Podknife, and Blueberry. And don't forget to send us your paranormal stories or favorite folklore tales. You send them our way, we'll read them on the show. It's awesome. So you can send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. Keep listening and stay spooky.